taking their place in a long, true line of everyday Americans.
Helping to secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity, this is the Constitution Study on the America Out Loud Network with your host, Paul Engel.
Pay the bills, stay out of jail, love the neighbors, and have a few good friends. Every day you are everyday Americans.
Hello there, everyday Americans, and welcome to the Constitution Study. This is where we read and study the Constitution. We teach the rising generation to be free. I'm glad you could join me, even though, well, not exactly good news on store for today. You know, I've noted over the years, and it seems to have been accelerated over the last 18 months, a significant attack on rights, on freedom, on liberty, and not just coming from government, not even from businesses, but literally from everyday people. This idea of not allowing other people to live their lives, not allowing people to disagree anymore. Now, if you take some time and you look back, this has been building for quite a while. In fact, I'm reminded of a speech given by Ronald Reagan, I believe back in 1961.
Our founding fathers here in this country brought about the only true revolution that has ever taken place in man's history. Every other revolution simply exchanged one set of rulers for another set of rulers. But only here did that little band of men so advanced beyond their time that the world has never seen their like since evolve the idea that you and I have within ourselves the God-given right and the ability to determine our own destiny. But freedom is never more than one generation away from extinction. We didn't pass it on to our children in the bloodstream. The only way they can inherit the freedom we have known is if we fight for it, protect it, defend it, and then hand it to them with the well-taught lessons of how they in their lifetime must do the same. And if you and I don't do this, then you and I may well spend our sunset years telling our children and our children's children what it once was like in America when men were free.
Ronald Reagan's words have come true. We now live in a country where we have to explain to the rising generation what it was once like to live in America where people were free. While this day has been coming for decades, recent events show us the real level of rot and decay when it comes to your rights and liberty. No longer must those of us who cherish our freedom and liberty concern ourselves only with the acts of government. No, today, businesses, society, and even our neighbors are out to crush the last vestiges of rights and liberty we enjoy. It's not that we weren't warned that this day would come, but like so many other situations, we never thought it would happen in our lifetimes. Now, some of you may think that I'm being hyperbolic when I claim that the day Ronald Reagan warned us about has come, or that so many are out to destroy our rights. As the drafters of the Declaration of Independence said, to prove this, let facts be submitted to a candid world. As I said, this has been going on for decades. While there are plenty of clauses in the Constitution we've allowed to be violated, there are two at the heart of this problem. The first is called the Supremacy Clause. It's Article 6, Clause 2. This Constitution and the laws of the United States, which shall be made in pursuance thereof, and all treaties made or which shall be made under the authority of the United States, shall be the supreme law of the land, and the judges in every state shall be bound thereby. Anything in the Constitution or laws of any state to the contrary, notwithstanding. Like so much of the Constitution, its language is quite clear. The Constitution of the United States is the supreme law of the land. Only laws the United States made pursuant to the Constitution, or treaties made under the authority of the United States, which comes from the Constitution, are considered supreme. This clause means if Congress passes a law that is not pursuant to the Constitution, or if the President and the Senate enter a treaty that is not within the powers of the United States, then that action is not supreme. In fact, that action is void. The Supreme Court recognized this in their Marbury versus Madison opinion. It is a proposition too plain to be contested that the Constitution controls any legislative act repugnant to it, or that the legislature may alter the Constitution by ordinary act. Between these alternatives, there is no middle ground. The Constitution is either a superior paramount law unchangeable by ordinary means, or is on the level with ordinary legislative acts and, like other acts, is alterable when the legislature shall please to alter it. Certainly, all those who have framed written constitutions contemplate them as forming the fundamental and paramount law of the nation. And consequently, the theory of every such government must be that an act of the legislature repugnant to the Constitution is void. If an act of the legislature, or for that matter, of the president or the courts, is repugnant to the Constitution and therefore void, how are we, or how have they, been allowed to be enforced? Simple. The people who should have known better didn't stand up to those who are breaking the law. The 10th Amendment states that the powers not delegated to the United States by the Constitution, nor prohibited by to the states, are reserved to the states respectively, or to the people. We seem to forget, or perhaps most of us were never taught, that the states ratified the Constitution that created the United States government. That means the states created the federal government not to be its servant, but to be served by it. It also means that when the states created the United States, they also set the boundaries on which it and its government are allowed to act. While this was assumed by those who drafted the Constitution, it was later confirmed when the states ratified the 10th Amendment. So when the federal government exercises a power not delegated to it by the Constitution, it's stealing powers rightfully owned by the states or the people. This reminds me of a third clause, although this one is not from the Constitution, but from a letter Thomas Jefferson sent to John Cartwright. The Constitution of most of our states assert that all power is inherent in the people, that they may exercise it by themselves in all cases to which they think themselves competent, as in electing their functionaries, executive and legislative, and deciding by a jury of themselves both fact and law in all judiciary cases in which any fact is involved. Or they may act by representatives, freely and equally chosen, that is their right and duty to be at all times armed, that they are entitled to freedom of person, freedom of religion, freedom of property, and freedom of the press. When any government acts beyond the powers delegated to it in the Constitution that formed it, they are stealing your powers. When any government infringes on your rights, they are stealing your rights. In short, whenever any government acts beyond their mandate, they are usurping your powers. It seems this has been going on for so long with no one standing up to these usurpations that not only have they become normal, but many Americans believe they are legal. So once the governments in America started assuming the powers to do pretty much whatever they wanted with little interference from the people, they started using the judicial system to reinforce those powers. If, like me, you actually read what comes out of the judicial system, you may notice how rarely our judges actually quote the Constitution. Now, Article 6, Clause 3 of the Constitution states, "The senators and representatives before mentioned, and the members of the several state legislatures, and all executive and judicial officers both of the United States and of the several states, shall be bound by oath or affirmation to support this Constitution." Every officer, including judges at both the state and federal level, are required to include support for the Constitution of the United States in their oath of office. So why does the supreme law of the land appear so rarely in the opinions of these judges? While I cannot read the mind of these judges, a quick look at what is included in their opinion should provide a pretty good answer. Have you heard the terms case law or constitutional law? How about precedent or stare decisis? Do you know what all of these terms have in common? They are, quote-unquote, laws created by the judiciary. Now, there are plenty of good reasons to consider the opinions of those who have gone before. However, Article 1, Section 1, Clause 1 of the Constitution states that all lawmaking power is vested not in the courts, but in Congress. All legislative powers herein granted shall be vested in a Congress of the United States, which shall consist of a Senate and House of Representatives. Yet today, not only do the courts make law, they claim the authority to overrule the acts of the other two branches of government. They do this by first claiming that their opinions are law, then by elevating those opinions above not only the laws made by Congress, but above the Constitution itself. That is why the opinions of judges are all but devoid of references to statutory law or the Constitution, while they are jam-packed with references to judges' opinions, euphemistically called case law. In effect, we no longer have checks and balances between the three branches of government, since one branch has assumed the incontestable power to rule the others. And who stood up against this usurpation of power? Did the other two branches stand up? Did the state stand up against their creation? Did the people stand up to restore the judicial branch to its legally authorized role in the government? The answer to these questions is no. And that is another reason why the republic and the liberty it was created to protect is dying. No one stood up when one branch of government usurped the powers of the other. Then into this crippled republic came the chance of a lifetime for those who desire power and believe they have the moral authority to rule over others. Now, many people blame COVID-19 for the attacks on liberty we are currently experiencing, when actually, the tyranny that has run rampant the last 18 months is the consequence of decades of unchecked governmental power. If the antipathy that the people and the states have shown toward the instances of government overreach was the explosive, well, then COVID-19 was the detonator. Suddenly, millions of Americans were afraid that they might get sick and die. And who was ready to assume all the powers necessary to save the American people? That's right, those who were drawn to power and therefore to government. COVID was the excuse to determine what businesses could be open and who could work. And the icing on the cake? All those unemployed people were now begging government to take care of them. Enhanced unemployment benefits allowed thousands to stay home and live on the government dole. And let's face it, who among us wouldn't prefer to go about our lives doing what we want while someone else picks up the bill? There was also another beneficiary lockdowns had: big businesses. Small businesses cannot afford to lobby government for special dispensation. That's why a California restaurant owner had her patio shut down while a movie company had their catering tent open right across the street. It's also why the Walmarts, Targets, Lowe's, and other large corporate stores were allowed to stay open while their competitors were forced to close. This led to a surge in small business closures while large corporations survived just fine. Of course, lockdowns and shutdowns were just the opening salvo, because the divide between small and large business is not just government lobbying. Large businesses not only have the capacity to absorb the cost of federal regulation, but the legal staff to fight them in court. Combine this with the cozy relationship large businesses have cultivated with government, and you should recognize how these two work together to both regulate your lives and to suppress their competition. Business licenses, promoted as tools to keep people safe, are instead more often used to control those businesses. This was on full display with the advent of the COVID mandates. See, first, governments instituted public mask mandates. Never mind that these mandates deprive you of your liberty and your property you have in your own body, without due process of law, which are violations of both the 5th and 14th Amendments of the Constitution of the United States. Then governments issued mask mandates for private businesses, a blatant deprivation of the owner's property, and again, without due process. Now, many businesses gladly joined in the deprivation of the rights of their customers. Yes, private businesses have a right to control how people are allowed to access their property, and many citizens were willing to submit to the whim of the store owners. What do you think happened to those few who recognized not only the infringement on their rights, but the fact that these mandates are void? If you guess that their precious licenses were threatened with another deprivation of property without due process, well, you're correct. What did the people do when their states started violating the very constitutions that created them? How did the people react when the governments they formed to protect their rights instead violated them? What happened when governments exercised unjust powers that the governed had not consented to? Most people did nothing. Even worse, many people took it upon themselves to become the enforcer of these illegal and immoral mandates. That's right, many people saw the opportunity to enforce their will upon their fellow citizens and jumped at the chance. Now we have government-issued vaccine mandates. It started locally, then in some of the states. Now, if you wish to go to a restaurant or other public gathering in these locations, you need to show that you've been vaccinated. If you want to attend school, you need to show you've been vaccinated. In many cases, both governments and businesses started requiring their employees to be vaccinated as a condition of employment. The federal government has even taken these draconian measures to the next level. Thinking of flying? The TSA wants proof you've been vaccinated. Working for the federal government or serving in the military? You need to get the vaccine. Own a business with more than 100 employees? You'll be fined if you don't require vaccination as a condition of employment. Now, if you resist these enforced vaccinations, you are ostracized and in some cases bullied both in person and online. It seems that we must tell the rising generation what it was once like in America when men were free. Yes, freedom is dying in America. The very idea of freedom and liberty seem to be on life support when the American people take the opportunity to impose their will on others. The very idea of allowing others to live as they see fit is no longer an American value. Like a comatose patient, or maybe like Sleeping Beauty, there's a spark of life, but only just. In his first inaugural, George Washington said, "And since the preservation of the sacred fire of liberty and the destiny of the Republican model of government are justly considered as deeply, perhaps as finely staked on the experiment entrusted to the hands of the American people." It appears that in the 21st century, our founders' trust was misplaced. We have worked hard over the past few decades to cut off the fuel to that sacred fire of liberty. And today, it seems many are doing everything they can to put it out. Now, fortunately, the embers of that fire still exist in the hearts of some Americans. I pray that for many more, the idea of freedom and liberty has not died, but merely fallen asleep. Who will breathe on the embers of that fire? Who will awaken the beauty of liberty in America? Who will stand their ground against those who wish to control others? Will it be you? If so, you are not alone. There are others for whom the sacred fire of liberty burns strong in their hearts. There are still others for whom the fire burns, but it's being stifled by fear and doubt. Now, just as a kiss was able to awaken Sleeping Beauty, the kiss of freedom can awaken the fire of liberty in the hearts of others. If freedom and liberty are dying in America, it is because we, the people, have stood by and let it happen. That also means that the American people can restore liberty if we're willing to stand and fight for it, protect it, defend it, and hand it on to the next generation.
So will you defend freedom? Will you hand it on to the next generation? You know, the more I look around, the more I see not only the infringements on our rights, but people's willingness, compliance, and sometimes even encouragement of these deprivation of rights. For example, I recently saw an article, this one came out of the Epoch Times, from the FBI director. Now, the FBI director, Christopher Wray, was speaking on September 21st, that he's worried about encrypted chat services. He says they need to find a way to get around encrypted chat services to combat domestic terrorism. You know, it reminds me of a quote from William Pitt the Younger in a speech he gave to the House of Commons. He said, "Necessity is a plea for every infringement of human freedom. It is the argument of tyrants. It is a creed of slaves." Now here's what we have. We have an FBI director that says it's a necessity that we find a way around encrypted chat services. Now, he claims that this is necessary to combat domestic terrorism. Okay. He's saying it's a necessity. We have to be able to infringe on your rights to protect you from domestic terrorism. Now, I understand the FBI's job is to investigate, and things like encryption make their life more difficult, because we've lost this idea of being secure from unreasonable searches and seizures. You see, the Fourth Amendment to the Constitution says that you will be free from unreasonable searches and seizures. Specifically, it says that the right of the people to be secure in their persons, houses, papers, and effects against unreasonable searches and seizures shall not be violated. But here you have a government investigative office that wants access to all of your data, all of the digital version of your papers, access to all of your accounts, all of those effects that you have access to, so that when necessary, they can snoop through them to search for domestic terrorists. Now, I know it's an inconvenience, but you see, governments weren't created for their own convenience. We did not create the FBI for it to be convenient. The Constitution was not created to make the life of the government entities convenient. See, the Declaration says that to secure these rights, what? Our rights to life, liberty, and property. Governments are instituted among men, deriving their just powers from the consent of the governed. So, Mr. Ray, I really don't care what you think. The Constitution says that the American people can live their lives without the FBI spying on them, without the United States spying on them in any way, shape, or form. Now, you can go to any set of committee you want and decry the fact that you can't snoop on the American people. Too bad. The Constitution is there to protect our rights. If it makes your life more difficult, you chose it. You decided to be in the FBI. You decided to be the director of the FBI. If you didn't know that the Constitution was there to protect the rights of the American people, well, then what are you doing in the FBI, sir? And what about the American people? Are we simply going to roll over and give access to more of our data because the FBI director wants it? Because it would make his life easier? Have we really fallen to the place where we consider our rights and liberty as so little value that we won't do anything to protect them? That the mere suggestion that it's that we must give it up to combat domestic terrorism is all it takes for a significant percentage of the American people to say, here you go. We don't care about the reasonableness of your search. We're just going to let you search everything. And again, this statement was made before, I believe, the Senate Committee on Homeland Security. We, the people, hired those senators to represent the states. Why aren't these senators saying, excuse me, Mr. FBI director, but we have this little thing called the Fourth Amendment, which says you can't access people's stuff without a warrant. There needs to be some reason to make it reasonable that you can't simply search people's stuff because you're thinking you can use it to keep them safe. That's not the way America is supposed to work. See, that's the way a kingdom works. That's the way slaves are treated. You don't have privacy. You don't have the ability to keep secrets from your government. Citizens can. Free people can. Subjects and slaves cannot. So apparently in the mind of Christopher Wray, the American people are merely subjects of the federal government that they can do with whatever they please. And if he needs access to your data, to your chat services, so he can go snooping to see if you're a domestic terrorist, well, hey, so be it. It's a necessity. That's the state of freedom in America. Or how about the fact that the Biden administration apparently is still, well, it's still racist. Apparently the Biden's Farm Loan Forgiveness Program, which is completely unconstitutional, but it's still denying access to this for non-white farmers. Now, every court that has heard this question has issued some sort of preliminary injunction, but apparently the Biden, King Biden, he doesn't care. He says, no, it's okay. We'll keep this going because, well, he's a racist. And he runs his administration as a racist. And I really don't know why anybody should be really surprised when you look at the history of not just the president, but the party that he's a part of and the actor, many of the actors of that party. But then again, we hired this racist in office. I know there are issues and questions about the election, but millions and millions of Americans voted for electors to choose this racist to be the chief executive. So we really can't be all that surprised when this happens. What the American people should be is ashamed. But I think we've maybe even lost that capability anymore. Even the idea of feeling shame for hiring a racist to execute the laws of our nation. But then again, do we have any shame anymore? Now, before I head off to break, I want to remind you to head over to healthycell.com/outloud. Try their vitamin products. They are designed to work at a cellular level. They boost your immune system, help you sleep better, help you focus. These aren't a pill. These are a gel. They're designed to absorb in your body better. And they have different formulas for your needs. Now, if you're like me, sometimes you have a hard time sleeping, well, try the REM Sleep. It'll help you get drowsy and fall asleep quicker and stay asleep longer so you can wake up refreshed. And as an America Out Loud listener, you get 20% off your first order. Just head to healthycell.com/outloud for that 20% off.
Well, my fellow Americans, how did you feel watching footage on the news of domestic terrorists looting our stores and burning our cities down? You were probably disgusted and angry as much as I was. It's disturbing what's going on. Well, you'd be shocked to know that your shopping habits are supporting these extremists. Companies like Amazon, Nike, Disney, FedEx, it's an endless list. And they've been supporting these radical groups. Let's stop supporting companies that fund these extremist groups. We can all do our part. Visit shoptotheright.com and you'll find businesses in a nationwide database and companies that are aligned with our American values. Visit shoptotheright.com and let's all make a difference. Today, America stands at the crossroads of history. Our actions will determine the fate of our nation. Well, that journey starts here and starts now. We invite you to join us in making the ultimate difference. Subscribe to our podcast and newsletters. Turn notifications on and stay in the know. You'll find all that back at AmericaOutloud.com. Liberty and justice for all.
Each of us is born with 30 trillion cells that make us. These cells determine how we feel, perform, sleep, focus, and how long we live. And to live our best life, all we have to do is feed our cells. But most food and supplements don't reach our cells, keeping us from reaching our full potential. Make every cell count with Healthy Cell. Founded with a mission to empower people to take control of their own health at the most fundamental level, Dr. Vincent Giampapa, world-renowned cell researcher and medical doctor, created supplements that work at the cellular level to boost immune health, sleep better, focus deeper, and stay younger longer. Go to HealthyCell.com and use code OUTLOUD for 20% off your first order of any product. And that's HealthyCell.com, HealthyCell, and use code OUTLOUD for 20% off.
Welcome back, everyday Americans. You've rejoined the Constitution Study, and today we're dealing with the condition of rights and liberty and freedom in America. We've already talked about the way liberties and rights have been treated lately, and we've talked about, the FBI and the Biden administration, but there's more to this. We need to take a broader look. We need to look at the fact that rights and liberty are not simply under attack from Washington, not even just from our state houses, but actually we're under attack from our very neighbors. But actually, before I get there, I want to go back to the states and look at what the states are doing. Now, remember, the states preceded the federal government. The states ratified the Constitution that created the federal government. Powers not delegated to the federal government nor denied to the states by the Constitution generally remain with the states. So let's take a look at some of the state issues. And I want to start in Massachusetts, where a recent case, and it was a case before the Massachusetts Supreme Judicial Court, that decided the First Amendment's Assembly Clause did not protect private property. In other words, that the government had a significant interest on who gathers where on your private property. Now, if I've said it once, I must have said it 100 times. This cannot be a First Amendment issue because Congress didn't make this law. Remember, the First Amendment starts out with Congress shall make no law. So since this isn't an act of Congress, how could it be a violation of the First Amendment, which is defined by an act of Congress? However, it is a violation of Article 19 of the Constitution of the State of Massachusetts, which say that the people have a right in an orderly and peaceful manner to assemble to consult upon the common good, give instruction to their representatives, and to request of the legislative body by way of addressing, petition, or remonstrance, redress for wrongs done to them. But let's start right at the beginning. To orderly and peaceably assemble to consult upon the common good. It's not simply a question of to petition their government. They have the ability to assemble as long as it's orderly and peaceable. Except, apparently, the Supreme Judicial Court of Massachusetts doesn't believe that. Now, this is currently being appealed in a case called Desrosiers versus Baker. And I'm sorry, probably mispronouncing the first name. But it's being sent to the Supreme Court for certiorari. Now, they've petitioned the Supreme Court to reconsider this. But think of the arrogance, the plain chutzpah of a government branch, a government entity, claiming that the citizens of that state, of that commonwealth, don't have the right to assemble in their own home. What is the state of freedom and liberty in America when a government entity doesn't believe you have the right to assemble in your own home? Now let's head out to Oregon. Now I found an article by a Dr. Steve Latulpe. Sorry if I'm mispronouncing your name. He's been on a bit of a rampage. See, now he's been dealing with the Oregon Medical Board for almost a year now, I guess, dealing with some of this COVID information. Now, he made a point that the Federation of State Medical Boards issued a joint statement declaring misinformation about COVID vaccines is unethical and unprofessional conduct, therefore may be subject to disciplinary actions, including suspension or revocation of their medical license. Now, I read these words and I'm like, yeah, but who decides what is misinformation? See, the very idea of science means you have to have competing ideas. One person, one side, one group does not get to define what is and isn't true. That's the absolute antithesis of science. And in fact, history is replete with men and women who challenged the status quo, who were persecuted for challenging the status quo, only to be found out later to be correct. Now, this nonsense goes on when the statement said, the evidence that we have safe, effective, and widely available vaccines against COVID-19 is overwhelming. Well, that's a bald-faced lie. Show me the evidence. I've yet to see any decent evidence that shows that the vaccine is safe. There have been approximately 12,000 people who have died shortly after taking the vaccine. More than, if my information is correct, than every other vaccine-related death of every other vaccine since the FDA has been tracking this. More than any, more deaths from the COVID-19 vaccines than the sum of all the previous deaths from vaccines in history. And he says there's evidence that it's safe, that it's effective. Effective at doing what? Certainly not preventing the spread of the disease. There's actually evidence that it is not effective at preventing the spread of the disease. But you see, this is the status quo. This is the government, the religious organizations saying, we have the truth, you're not allowed to challenge this. Now, this doctor, going all, again, almost back a year, back to November of 2020, has been in a struggle with the director of the Oregon's medical board, claiming that he better follow the governor's executive order or face administrative sanction. I'm sorry, is that not extortion? Yeah, that's right. I said extortion. You will comply. You will give up any sense of science and questioning. You will follow the bureaucratic order, or else. Now, not only is this an obvious infringement of the freedom and liberty of this doctor, but isn't it also an infringement on the freedom and liberty of the American people? If we're not allowed to be shown competing information, competing studies, competing evidence, are you free to make a decision? I mean, to me, that's not a small issue. If you are not free to choose to hear competing points of view, how are you free to make a choice? Now, I've put a request in to Dr. Tulippi. I'm probably still getting it wrong, and I apologize. Hopefully, I'll get to talk to him soon, because I would like to talk to him on the radio and kind of look at the extortion, the intimidation that that is a state medical board has undertaken in the promotion of a specific point of view. So we'll keep your eyes out. Hopefully I'll hear back from the doctor and we'll be able to schedule something. But I want to go on. See, I found that a story about students at Park Point University that received an email that action could be taken over complaints of misgendering or pronoun misuse. Now, let's stop and just think about that for just a minute. My Park Point University is in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. So I went to the Pennsylvania Constitution. I found Article 1, Section 7, which says, "The free communication of thoughts and opinions is one of the invaluable rights of man, and every citizen may freely speak, write, and print on any subject, being responsible for the abuse of that liberty." So what you're saying here, I believe what Park University is saying, is that it is an abuse for someone to use a pronoun that the listener or the hearer or the object of the discussion doesn't like. But isn't that forcing someone to use a certain speech? In other words, is that not the denial of the freedom to speak freely, the ability to speak freely on any subject? Is it an abuse to look at someone who is obviously a male and refer to them as Mr., Sir, or him? Okay, they want to be called something else. That's not the speaker's fault. And if that person says, "But I want you to call me this," well, then it's a question. Are you demanding that I use the pronoun that you want? That is an abridgment of freedom of speech. Now, whether or not it's polite to do so, whether or not it's cordial to do so, a university that has a policy that that you have to be coerced into using certain names and pronouns, to the abuse of the English language, by the way, is depriving people of their free speech. Now, I'm not sure if Park Point University is a public school or a private school. The difference is important. See, if it's a private school, well, then they can create those policies and legally enforce them. You're not required to go to that school. However, if this is a public school, this is a violation of the Constitution of the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania. But we've gotten so warped and twisted over pronouns, or more importantly, the fact that someone gets to dictate to someone else what they can say, what they can do, what they can think. That's the problem. As bad as it is that that people are have an issue with their obvious sex, the fact that they want to take their delusion and force it onto others, to force others to comply, well, that's tyrannical. I mean, let's just say, all right, now, my name is Paul, and I prefer to be called Paul, not Pablo, not San Pablo. I prefer Paul. Now, does that mean I have a right to force other people to call me Paul? No. I have a right not to respond to somebody if they call me something other than Paul. I certainly do. But I don't have the right to harm you, to, as the school put it, take action because you call me the wrong name. This is an extremely dangerous precedent, and it's not a precedent. This has been going on for years. The very idea of freedom of speech is dead because we have let nonsense like this continue. To say that a school, listen, let me put you this way, and I apologize if this, my intent is not to offend, but it is to shock, to make you think about it. Let's say that a school established a policy that said that the proper pronoun to use for a black man was boy. That if you did not refer to black men as boy, there'd be serious consequences. Now just imagine the brouhaha that would come up from that. Just imagine the ACLU would be involved, the NAACP would be involved. There'd be a laundry list of organizations involved going, how dare you require such a thing? Yet here we have a school saying, listen, you must use what, the term they, to refer to a single individual, which is a violation of it's just a corruption of the English language. Now, maybe somebody wants to be referred to as they. Then it is up to me. Do I wish to or not? But to say there'll be consequences when what should happen is there should be consequences for the school administrators that have put forth such a policy. To the author and distributor of this email, there should be consequences for violating the free speech rights of students, faculty, and staff, for the discriminatory policy for those people who don't recognize the fiction that a man is a woman and a woman is a man just because they feel like it. How about that discrimination? Where does that fit in your anti-discrimination policy? But you see, since the very idea, of I may vehemently disagree with what you say, but I will defend to the death your right to say it, died in America? Now the exact opposite is true. If I don't like what you say, I will destroy you. Where's freedom? Where's liberty? Where's your ability to speak on topics of any import? It's gone. And sadly, most Americans simply sit back and accept it. Now let's swing back to our criminal government in Washington. And yes, I refer to them as the criminal government because they spend most of their time breaking the supreme law of the land. What else are you going to call it? And this idea of misinformation, who gets to decide what is and isn't misinformation? Whose information should we listen to and who should we ignore? And who decides who that is? And this very idea that you cannot be allowed to think for yourself, you must conform to the agreed upon narrative. Agreed upon by who? Agreed upon by, well, the bureaucrats, of course. And chief of the scared, of the run scared bureaucrats in America today has to be Dr. Fauci. Now, again, this is the same Dr. Fauci that admits that store-bought masks don't work to curb the COVID, spread of COVID. That, yes, the NIH did actually give money and were players in the gain-of-function research that led to the Wuhan virus. Did not recommend the booster shot that he's now recommending. Basically, I don't know how anybody trusts anything this man says. So when he comes out and says, we are almost overrun, this is in a tweet, we are almost overrun. We have a lot of children in hospitals now. So even though, relatively speaking, compared to an adult, They don't get as seriously ill. We have lost more children from SARS-CoV-2 than we ever lost for influenza, and we vaccinated children against influenza. Sounds scary, huh? Remember what I said of how can you be free? How can you have a free thought if you're not allowed all the information? Well, let's just say Mr. Fauci's assertion was challenged with facts. In fact, facts from the CDC itself. Now, for years I've been told there are three types of lies. Lies, darn lies, and statistics. So I understand that statistics can, you know, say just about anything you want. But let's also take into consideration that at least for 2020, COVID deaths have been overestimated and flu deaths have been underestimated. There's data to back that up. By the way, if you look at Kyle Lamb, KYLam8 on Twitter, he does a whole tweet series on this, and he goes into some of the details. Let me summarize it for you. If you just take the number of hospitalizations for flu, there have been 58.6 children hospitalized for flu per 100,000, right? So 58.6 per 100,000 children hospitalized for flu. This is in the time frame when we believe it's been underreported. While for COVID-19, it was 55.5. So the number is factually incorrect. But wait, there's more. You see, The Atlantic did a study of almost 50,000 hospitalized patients in the VA system and found that 48% of the COVID hospitalizations, yeah, they were either asymptomatic or had mild or moderate symptoms, meaning they were in the hospital, but they didn't need to go to the hospital for COVID. In other words, there is no evidence that COVID-19 is more dangerous to the children than flu. In fact, the data shows quite the opposite. But if you cherry pick your data, you get exactly what you want people to think. So despite the fact that the CDC is counting every death of someone with COVID, not necessarily from COVID, the weekly mortality rate for COVID per million between the ages of 0 and 17 years of age is about half the average of the 10 previous estimated flu season. Half. And it's almost 80% lower than the deadly H1N1 that we were so scared about a few years ago. See, that's why this free speech and freedom of the press is so important. See, if you only hear one side, if you only hear the Dr. Fauci's of the world, and you never are allowed to hear the other side of the story, if, like the doctor in Oregon, is prohibited, has his license threatened for merely pointing out facts and data that don't agree with the politicians and bureaucrats, well, then you're not free. How can you make a free decision if you're not allowed access to all the information? Or put in medical terms, how can you make informed consent when significant portions of the information are withheld from you? And again, withheld from government, that's Dr. Fauci. That's the Oregon Medical Board, apparently. Withheld by the media, which refused to report on the studies for ivermectin or even accurate and reasonable data over the COVID statistics. Right down to your next door neighbor or the person on the street that doesn't care that that someone like me has a 99.5% chance of surviving, that the death rate for COVID is 1.4%. 1.4% of everybody in every age range. They don't care. They don't want to hear that data. They just want to take their marching orders and go. See, protecting freedom isn't simply protecting it from government or government actors. It's protecting it from everyone. Yes, we have to protect our freedom from government infringement. It means looking the FBI director in the eye and say, you want to access my encrypted data? Too bad. Oh, you want to treat farmers differently based on the color of skin? No, that's not allowed. The private property is private property. Standing against medical boards and universities. and everyone else who attempts to impose their will on someone else without probable cause. But we have to learn not simply to oppose these things, but to do so properly. So my last story today comes out of New York City. Now, as you know, Mayor de Blasio has turned New York City into basically its own little concentration camp. You now need to show proof of vaccination to go to a restaurant. Now, three women apparently went to a restaurant, and they were asked to provide their proof of vaccination. Now, I don't know the details of what happened. I'm sure there's a lot more that's going to come out, but these three women are accused of assaulting the hostess for asking for proof of vaccination. They claim that she used a racial slur, claiming that their vaccine cards were fake. But is a proper solution to that assault? See, I don't think it's assault. I do think that any business that requires proof of vaccination is an enterprise contrary to freedom. They are collaborators with those that are trying to enslave the American people. So we shouldn't do business with them. But if you wish to do business with them, that's your choice. I can't make that choice for you. You can't be surprised when they do that. And the answer should not be violence. I mean, unless they are committing violence against you, the answer to this cannot be violence. As Captain John Parker said, we must stand our ground, absolutely, but we must not fire unless fired upon. That's not simply a question of gunfire. That includes any forms of violence. Now that this has happened, Black Lives Matter has gotten into the game. They're now protesting the restaurant. This seems to me a bit more racial or maybe politically opportunist than actually a question of guarding freedom. Because if BLM was really worried about freedom, it wouldn't have taken these women being charged with assault for them to show up and protest Black men and women across the city being denied access to restaurants because they decide not to be vaccinated. See, the whole thing seems to become warped and twisted. We protect rights and liberty that infringe on the rights of others, and we deny people their rights and liberty that don't. We have become so polarized, so afraid of what might happen that we react rather than think. At least it seems a lot of people are doing that. But the question I want to ask the American people is, how are you defending freedom? See, if you look at the world, if you look at the state of freedom in America, well, I have to notice two things. One, America is still a great nation. Millions of people are still trying to get in, not get out. That's generally a good sign. But if I look at freedom in America as a patient, I must say it's ill. It's dying. And yes, governments are contributing. Yes, institutions are contributing. But I think the biggest contributor is actually the American people. Whether from their direct acts of infringing on the rights of others to their passivity in the face of such atrocious behavior. If in 100 years America is still a great nation, it'll be because we the people stood up and required the people act with freedom and liberty, allowing others freedom and liberty, that we demanded of our employees in government that they do their jobs to protect the rights of the American people, all the American people, not simply the ones they agree with politically. That we look at the public institutions and demand that our employees hold them accountable to their oaths and to the Constitution. that they protect freedom and liberty for everyone, not just for a preferred few. That we look at our neighbors and say, do you really want to associate with someone who's not interested in the freedom of others? Do we want to do business with those, transact with those who are not interested in protecting the freedom and liberty of others? We have to decide. We have to stop pointing our fingers at someone else and saying, it's their fault, it's their fault. We need to recognize, in large part, it is our fault. And the people we're blaming are there because of us, for the most part. Now, I agree with John Jay. The best way to do that is start by reading and studying the Constitution and teaching the rising generation to be free. He said, by knowing your rights, you'll sooner perceive when they're violated, be the better prepared to defend and assert them. And I believe that's also true when we see other people's rights being trampled. We'll recognize that, and we'll be prepared to defend and assert them and do them properly. Now, you can find out more, head to constitutionstudy.com. You'll find my articles, videos. Hey, ask a question. If you're just not sure about something, right in the menu bar, ask a question. Join our live Q&A twice a month on Thursday evening, 7 Central Time. I have a live Q&A. You can find out more there on the website. But don't simply sit back and go tisk, 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 or be a keyboard warrior, you know, forwarding articles and thinking that does something. No. No, that does nothing. If, as Sir William Pitt the Younger said, necessity is a plea of tyrants, it is also the creed of the slaves. So if you let someone claim the necessity to infringe on your rights, they may be the tyrant, but that makes you the slave. And if you want to understand how to avoid that, again, check out constitutionstudy.com for more information. You can also head to constitutionscholars.com. Join the conversation. It's absolutely free. Join others that are reading and studying the Constitution. Learn how to study for yourself and how to teach others. Those tools are there for you to help you read and study, to help you defend freedom and liberty for all. And if you can support the work that I'm doing, I would appreciate it greatly. But if all you want to do is share that information, that's fine as well. It's completely up to you. This has become a mission for me, and it's a mission I gladly take on. Now, I want to remind you that all my shows go to podcast about a day or two after they're heard on the broadcast. You can find them on Spotify, Stitcher, Pandora, and iHeart Podcast, basically anywhere you get your podcasts. And if you wouldn't mind, go to Apple Podcasts and leave a rating and review for the show. It helps other people find freedom and liberty through the Constitution Study.
Paid bills, stay out of jail.